Gretchen.
What does she have? How did she get you? It doesn't even make sense. How could you do this to me? I'm so humiliated, Ren.
As if her knees had given way beneath her, she sinks to the floor and buries her face in her hands, sobbing. I get out of bed and walk over to her, dropping down beside her. I put a hand on her shoulder, but she jerks away.
Don't you dare touch me, she says.
I never meant to hurt you, I say.
Does it matter whether you meant to or not?
She says, looking up at me with tears streaming down her cheeks. No, I don't guess it does. But I'm sorry for it. She stares at me for several long seconds, and then reaches out to cup the side of my face with her hand.
Can we fix this?
She asks softly. I don't want to say it, but I know I owe her the truth. I shake my head. You didn't break it. I did. You deserve better treatment than what I've given you. I'm really sorry, Gretchen. Her tears increase, and I hate myself for hurting her like this. She gets to her feet, walks into the bathroom, and closes the door behind her. In a few seconds, I hear the shower start.
52. Kylie. It has been a very long time since Kylie prayed. But from the moment the idea comes to her, she doesn't stop praying that the next time one of the men comes into the room to check on them, it will be the one she needs it to be. At least a couple of hours pass before she hears the door lock slide open, and a man steps inside the room. Do you think I could ask you a favor? She says.
Probably not,
the man says. Recognizing his voice, she breathes a sigh of relief, along with a silent thank you for the answer to her prayer. Kylie forces herself to look directly at his face, manages a small smile when she says, Is there any way I could possibly take a shower? She waves a hand at the bottom of her dress. I'm kind of a mess. It would be really nice to clean up a bit.
No,
he says, shaking his head.
I can't let you do that.
I don't want you to get in trouble with your friend, Kylie says. But I'm kind of miserable. He frowns, considering her words before saying,
Well, it's not like he's in charge or anything.
I mean, you could watch, if you're afraid I might do something. Kylie holds her gaze steady against his. More than anything, she wants to reel away in disgust, but she keeps her expression compliant and waits for his answer, not wanting to appear too pushy. He glances at his watch and looks as if he's struggling with an answer.
There's a bathroom down the hall. I guess, if I go with you, it can't hurt anything. I imagine where you're going, they'll prefer you clean anyway.
I prefer me clean, Kylie says. Thank you. He crosses the floor, leans over, and inserts the key into the cuff attached to the bed. He puts it on her right wrist, locking her hands together. Aaron, quiet until now, says,
Please don't leave me here alone.
I'll be back, Kylie says. Outside in the hallway, he closes the door behind him and locks it with a key.
This way,
he says, waving her left. She follows him to a door at the end of the hall. He opens it and then waits for her to step inside. The bathroom is small, a sink, a toilet, a shower. He closes the door behind them, looks at her, and raises his hands in the air.
Well, hurry up if you're going to do it.
Okay, she says. Her heart is pounding so hard she can feel it in her throat. She holds up her handcuffed wrists and says, I'll be a lot more effective without these. He looks at her as if trying to decide what exactly she means, She forces her mouth to smile.
"Or so I've been told," she says.
He doesn't take his eyes from hers as he reaches in his pocket and pulls out a keychain. He inserts the key in the lock one wrist at a time and removes the cuffs.
"That should do it,"
he says, with a half-grin on his mouth. She reaches around to unzip the back of her dress, turning so that she can close her eyes as she lowers first one side and then the other. She tells herself she has no other choice.
"Could you unhook my bra?" she asks.
She feels his fumbling fingers at the clasp, her skin rebelling to the touch. She slips out of it, dropping her dress with it. Her panties are last, and she hears his quick intake of breath as she slides them down. He reaches around her and turns the shower on, the water spurting hard once and then falling in a steady stream. His arm brushes her breast as he pulls back, and she doesn't know if it's intentional or not, but she feels him tense. She has no idea whether she can go through with this. She steps into the shower, letting the spray pummel her face and soak her hair. She feels him watching her. She makes herself look at him, as if inviting him in. She can see him breathing hard.
"Want to join me?"
she asks, not even recognizing her own voice. She glances at his pants for confirmation of exactly how much he would like to say yes. He's unbuttoning his shirt and starting on his zipper when a scream breaks through the door. The sound is like a knife cutting through the air, a death scream, like someone's life is ending. The man yanks up his zipper and roars at her.
"You stay put!"
Okay, she says.
He jerks out of the bathroom, slamming the door behind him. She hears a key in the lock. There's a very small window across from the toilet. She knows they're on the second floor of the house because she'd heard the men coming up the stairs. She stretches on tiptoe to look out the window, but she can't see how far down it is. It doesn't matter, though. She knows this is her only hope. She glances at the door and sees a slide lock at the top. She slips it into place so that it is locked from inside as well. She looks around for something to break the glass. A plunger stands just behind the toilet. She picks it up and holds the bottom with both hands, then slams the wooden end into the window. The first time, it doesn't break, and she feels the jarring in her elbows and shoulders. She tries again, and this time the glass shatters. She punches as much of it out as she can. Footsteps sound in the hall, and she knows she only has seconds. He's coming back. She struggles into the opening, sticking her head through, first one shoulder and then another, praying the rest of her body will fit. Now that she can see outside, she realizes the ground is two very high floors beneath her. A large boxwood sits just to the left of the window. She wriggles her way through the opening until she is all but hanging by her feet. If only she could turn around and drop feet first, but there's no way to do it. She hears him shoving against the door now, cursing the lock on the inside. She's so scared she can barely breathe. She can't do it. Can't make herself let go. She hears the splintering of the wood as the door starts to give beneath his pounding shoulder. Within seconds, he'll be inside. No choice. She makes herself let go. She falls.
53. Tie. You wonder how you ever considered Wynn a friend. She'd arrived at the hotel a couple of hours ago, instantly establishing herself as protector over Lizzie. She refused to even meet your eyes, barely speaking at all. She'd led Lizzie inside the room that adjoins yours, all but closing the door in your face. You stew in your own room for a bit, and then send her a text. "Meet me at the ice machine on this floor, now." You wait at the end of the hall a full 5 minutes before she finally shows up, ice bucket in one hand.
What do you want, Ty?
She asks, sticking the bucket inside the machine and pushing the button.
I want you to stay out of my marriage, Wynn.
She turns around and glares up at you.
I'm here for Lizzie, Ty, in whatever capacity she needs me.
I'm the one she needs here. She doesn't need you filling her head with stuff that doesn't matter now.
Well, that's convenient, isn't it? Kylie disappears, and your infidelity gets a pass?
That's beneath even you, Wynn. She actually looks ashamed for a moment before saying,
I never wanted to be put in the position of discovering your fling, Ty. But you know my loyalty is to Lizzie, and she deserves way better than what you were doing to her.
Do you even know what she was doing in Italy with that?
I saw what some paparazzi reporter said. Do I believe Lizzie would have been unfaithful to you first? No, I don't believe that for a second.
She picks up the ice bucket and walks down the hallway, back to Lizzie's room. You want to go after her? Yell at her to mind her own damn business. But you stay where you are, silent. Because the truth is, she's right.
54. Wren. It's 6 in the morning here, midnight there. I know I shouldn't call her yet, but I can't stop myself. I dial the number and wait in silence for a few moments, and then the ring. Her voice when she answers is low and tired-sounding. I'm sorry for waking you, I say.
You didn't,
she answers. Hey, I say.
Hey.
How are you?
Not so good just now.
No word yet?
No.
She sounds defeated and grief-stricken, and I wish I could find something to say that would erase both from her voice, something to give her hope. What can I do for you? I ask.
Nothing,
she says softly.
I just want her back so badly.
Can I come there? Just be with you while you wait? A long pause follows my question, and I know I shouldn't have asked it.
Wren, my life has completely fallen apart. Some of it is my fault. I've got to do what I can to put it back together again.
You're not being fair to yourself.
Somehow in the scheme of things, that doesn't seem so important right now.
Lizzie, I miss you.
Wren, please. We can't be.
Are you trying to convince me or yourself? I say, hearing the frustration in my voice.
You know it's true.
No, I don't. She sighs and after a few seconds says,
Even before this happened, we knew it. Two different worlds. We live in two different worlds.
I want us to live in the same world.
We don't always get what we want,
she says, and I hear the resignation in her words. Lizzie.
I have to go. Goodbye, Wren.
I sit for a long time after she hangs up, Sophia climbing onto my lap. I rub her soft head while I wish I knew how to make myself let Lizzie go. That's what she's asked me to do. It's all she's asked me for. Why then does it feel so impossible?
55. Lizzie. From the bed next to mine, Wynne rises up on one elbow and squints at me through sleep-heavy eyes.
Was that who I think it was?
I sit up with a pillow behind me and nod.
Oh, my word. Wren Sawyer just called you on the telephone.
I don't answer because I don't know what I can say that won't remind me of how far I've mentally strayed from my marriage, my family.
You don't need to feel guilty with me, Lizzie.
I feel guilty, period.
You didn't cause any of this.
I pick up a pillow and fold my arms around it, clutching it to my chest. What if we don't find her? Wynne gets out of her bed and slides into mine, putting her arm around my shoulder and cradling me the way I've seen her do with her children when something has gone wrong for them.
We will find her. We need to keep our faith in that, and you need to give yourself a break. I press my face into the pillow, sobs rising up from deep inside me. Wynn wraps both arms around me then, smoothing a hand across my hair. What's happened with Kylie has nothing to do with you going to Italy or meeting Ren Sawyer. The timing is nothing but coincidental. And if Ty had gone with you instead of staying here and bringing another woman into your bedroom, you never would have met Ren. Or at least not in the same way. Are you going to deny that? Does it matter? It matters. Ty's perfectly willing to let your judgment be clouded by guilt. I, on the other hand, am not.
I just want her back,
I say, fresh tears staining the pillowcase.
Shh,
she says. I know. Just hold on, okay? Just hold on.
56. Kylie. She has no idea which direction to take, but she starts running. Completely naked, running. Feet pounding, arms pumping, running as if life will end if she stops. As she knows, it very likely will. She can't tell if he is behind her. If he will jump in a vehicle and tear off after her, overtaking her, running her down. She won't look back. Looking back will allow the fear to swallow her, pulling her beneath the surface like a drowning victim in the last moments of resistance. She veers off the narrow paved road and runs into the woods, knowing that, at least here, he'll have to follow her on foot. Her chest can barely pull in the air needed to keep oxygen flowing to her limbs. She steps on rocks that cut into her feet, but the pain is nothing compared to the fear. The woods begin to thin, fade from trees to grass pasture. She keeps running, stride after stride, until she can feel her legs begin to fail her. She won't last much longer. No more energy, no more air. And that's when she sees the house.
57. Lizzie. By the end of the day, I'm not sure I can make it through another one like this. Ty and Wynn are at each other's throats. And while I know Wynn is only standing up for me, I just want out of the conflict. I long for a quiet place where I can sit and wait for the phone to ring with news of Kylie. My nerve endings feel as if they've been dipped in Tabasco sauce. I have to get out of the room for a while. I'm going to take a walk, I say to Wynn. I'll be back in a bit. I can go with you, she says. That's okay, I say. I think I need to clear my head. Ty gives me a disapproving look, but says nothing. Wynn says, don't forget your phone. I grab it from the nightstand and walk out the door. I take the stairs and let myself out a side entrance. The late spring afternoon is warm, and I welcome the feel of the air on my skin in comparison to the freezing air conditioner of our room. The hotel connects to a park. I find the entrance and start to run, even though I'd intended to walk. The exertion feels good. I push myself faster, faster until I can barely draw in a breath. When I stop, I lean over with my palms on my knees, sucking in oxygen. I walk to a nearby bench and sink onto the wood seat, sliding down and letting my head rest against the back. I have no idea how to exist in this place we're in, this waiting place. There's only been one experience in my life I can compare it to. When Kylie was a little girl, we had a scare over some blood work that came back indicating she might have leukemia. During the second round of testing, while the doctors determined whether she had it or not, all I could do was push myself through every phase of the day, functioning like a robot that can only do what it had been programmed to do. I have never known the kind of relief I knew the day we got the news that Kylie did not have the disease. For a long time after the nurse who had called me hung up the phone, I sat on my kitchen bar stool, staring out the window, letting my gratitude fill every pore in my body. I could not bear the thought of losing her. and to be given that reprieve was the greatest blessing of my life. And now here I am, asking to be blessed yet again in the same way. Tragic events befall countless people every single day on this earth. Why should I think I should be spared? I don't have an answer for that. My needs are not more worthy than the next person praying for a miracle. And I know that's exactly what I'm asking for. I drop my head. I pray again from the bottom of my soul for my daughter's safety. 58. Lizzie. I see the police car at the front of the hotel as I round the corner to exit the park. The lights on top are spinning, throwing out alarming crisscrosses. My heart thumps hard in my chest, and I feel suddenly sick with apprehension. I run as fast as I can toward the car, forcing myself not to process the scenarios pounding through my brain. A police officer steps out of the hotel just as I get to the main door. "Are you here about my daughter?" I ask, breathless. "Mrs. Harper?" "Yes," I manage, barely able to get the word out.
"Can you come with me, please?"
"What is it?" I ask, panic welling up. Just then Ty and Wynne come running out of the hotel.
"They're taking us to the police station," Ty says.
"What's happened?" I ask, and I'm pleading now. I don't think I can stand another second of not knowing. The three of us slide into the back of the car, the officer getting behind the wheel. He turns on the siren and pulls quickly out of the parking lot and onto the highway. I look at Ty, feeling the tears running down my face. "Can he not tell us anything?" I ask.
"He said he was only asked to pick us up and take us to the station. He doesn't know anything else."
Wynne slides her arm around my shoulders and pulls me up against her.
"Shh, Lizzie. We have to assume the best, okay? Don't let yourself consider anything else."
But I can't help it. I am tortured by fear of what we are about to learn. I put my face in my hands and try not to sob out loud, my shoulders shaking with silent force. The drive takes almost 15 minutes. The cruiser swings into the lot of a building marked Charlottesville Police. As soon as the car stops, Ty opens the door and Wynne and I slide across the seat to get out.
"This way, please,"
the officer says, waving for us to follow him. We walk quickly inside the building, our footsteps echoing on the hard floor of a long, well-lit hallway. At the very end, the officer knocks on a door, sticks his head inside, and then waves for us to step in. In the corner of the room sits Kylie, huddled inside a blanket, her face pale and drawn. She looks up and spots us, instantly dissolving into tears. Ty and I both go to her, dropping onto our knees and enfolding her in our mutual embrace. All three of us are crying then. I feel Wynne's hand on my shoulder.
"I'm so sorry,"
Kylie says on a broken sob.
"I'm so very sorry."
"Thank God," I say. "You're okay. You're okay."
59. Wren. I do a Google search for Kylie Harper as soon as I get out of bed. The first result is the Huffington Post with missing UVA student found. I click on the link and wait for the article to come up, and then quickly skim it. Kylie Elizabeth Harper, 20, was found alive late yesterday after she had been missing for 5 days. Harper was apparently abducted in Charlottesville, Virginia, on her way back to her dorm after seeing a band in the college town. One source says she managed to escape through a second-floor window of the house where she was being held. Investigators say Harper claims there was another girl being held in the house with her, and that after she escaped, the kidnappers took the other girl and disappeared. There are still no reports of the second girl's whereabouts. I glance at the beginning of the article again, reread the first line with an incredible sense of relief. For her. For Lizzie. And a sick feeling for the other girl involved. I pick up my phone and type in a text message. "So relieved for you and your family. If you need me for anything, I'm here for you." I want to say more, but forced myself to put the phone down and leave it at that.
60. Ty. You try to make things like they once were. Back when Kylie was a little girl, and you came home from work at dinner time. Back when you all ate at the table together, when you didn't use work as an escape from a life you'd begun to grow bored with. Kylie decides not to finish the semester at UVA. The first 2 weeks after she moves home, you don't leave for the office until the three of you have coffee together, heading out only after you've all talked about what you're doing for the day and interesting stuff in the newspaper. It's all very normal, very family-like. Then you ask yourself why it feels like you're all trying too hard, acting out roles instead of just being yourselves in a way that feels comfortable and right. As for your life at the office, you're all business, no more affairs. You're committed to doing right by Lizzie. There's been no mention of that rock star loser, and so you're willing to pretend that it never happened. And if you try hard enough to act normal, be normal, then there's no reason life can't go back to what it once was. You're willing to make sacrifices for it, convinced that in the end it will be worth it. Because, after all, human nature is such that it's not until you nearly lose something that you realize what you have.
61. Kylie knows that she has to start getting out of the house, but she can't seem to make herself. She's closed herself in, sealed out the world beyond her front door, as if in doing so, she won't have to think about the ugly stuff she hadn't really believed existed before her abduction. It was all stuff she heard on the news, things that happened to other people, other families. She dreams about it nearly every night, wakes up in a sweat, gasping for air, and she sees the other girl's face, Aaron's face, hears her voice, constantly wonders what those men did with her. She still hasn't been found. Kylie has begun to think they will never find her. Her guilt is mind-numbing, choking. It sits like a concrete blanket on her shoulders, and it is all she can do to move through a complete day beneath its weight. She's sitting on the screened porch one afternoon, with her MacBook on her lap, staring out across the backyard, when her mom comes out, handing her a glass of iced tea. "Thought you might be thirsty," she says. "Thanks," Kylie says, setting it on the table next to her. "How are you doing?" her mom asks, a now familiar concern darkening her eyes. "I'm okay. Try not to worry about me, Mom. I'll get there eventually." "I know. I just can't stop thinking about Aaron," Kylie says, anguish sharpening the edges of her voice. "If she hadn't screamed when she did, I never would have gotten away. I know she did it intentionally so I would have a chance. It probably cost her her life. And the first thing you did was run for help. There was nothing else you could do," she says, reaching out to squeeze Kylie's hand. "You were no match for those men." Kylie considers this, knowing, logically, that her mom is right. But logic has little sway over guilt. And so she says nothing. "You have a lot of healing to do, honey, and that's going to take however long it takes. You were a victim, too. It's just, I can't stand to think of where she might be." The tears come in full force then, and Kylie can do nothing to stop them. Her mom gets up, scoots onto the chair beside her, and folds her close in a tight embrace. "Shh," she says. "I'm so sorry, honey, for everything you've been through, for everything you're feeling. If I could take it from you, I would." "I know," Kylie says, burying her face in her mother's neck and crying until she has no more tears to cry. They sit, silent, while a neighbor's dog barks, a car drives by on the road in front of the house, and life goes on. The ice in her tea has completely melted when Kylie finally speaks again. Mom?
Hmm?
I came across a story on the internet about you and Ren Sawyer in Italy together. Was that true? Kylie feels her mother stiffen, as if bracing herself against the conversation to come.
Parts of it, she says softly.
You really met him? She asks.
I didn't know who he was at first. I think we both really needed a friend just then for completely different reasons.
Is that all you were? Friends?
In the end, yes, she says.
Can I ask you something?
Anything.
If what happened to me had never happened, would you and Daddy still be together? She's silent for several long moments before saying,
Part of me wants to gloss over our history, Kylie. Tell you, yes, absolutely. But another part of me feels that I owe you honesty. You're an adult now. You know that life gets complicated sometimes.
I know that Daddy has cheated on you.
Her mom draws in a sharp breath, as if a knife has just been inserted in the center of her chest.
Kylie, I never wanted to admit it, she says. I guess I wanted to believe you were to blame because of what I read in your journal that time. But that wasn't right. Or fair to you. I'm sorry, Mom. For all the times I was so ugly to you. I'm sorry.
She kisses Kylie's hair and shakes her head. Let's leave all that in the past, okay? I think we've both had a clear reminder of how precious life is. How uncertain and unpredictable. I don't want to take a minute of it for granted.
Neither do I. Kylie says. They sit quiet for a bit, comfortable with each other in a way they haven't been for a very long time.
I was thinking I might take a drive on the Blue Ridge Parkway this afternoon, her mom finally says, and bring my camera along. Would you like to go?
I would, Kylie says. I really would.
62. Lizzie. 3 months pass in a blank. I watch Kylie for signs of healing and begin to see a little progress each day. She's begun to show an interest in photography, and we go shopping one afternoon to buy her a camera. It's something we're doing together, and I love that we can share it. Comparing shots, talking about places we might like to go, that we would love to capture with our cameras. I don't think I'm biased in saying she has an eye for angles, for unique takes. There's something about the camera being between her and the world that is allowing her to ease back into it, to begin seeing life as beautiful once again, the harsh, ugly edges of her experience fading for bits of a time here and there anyway. As for me, and life outside anything that doesn't relate to Kylie, I simply don't let myself think about it. My commitment to Kylie is complete, my need secondary at best. I've had a few texts from Ren, but I've deleted them without reading them. It seems better not to let his words into my head, my heart. Because I have chosen to make this life with Ty, with Kylie, what is important to me. I have to give Ty credit. I've never seen him try so hard. He calls me throughout the day, sends me flowers. Plans weekend escapes for the three of us. It's nearly ideal. As perfect as I had once imagined our life could be, if Ty were able to refocus some of his career ambition to a home life with us. And that's what he's done. So I try.
Tell myself I will see him through new eyes. Truly forgive the past. I've been given a second chance with my daughter. I'm reminded of the enormity of this gift on a daily basis. Even more so because of the fact that Kylie and I have found common ground and our love for each other means everything to me. For that, I can wipe the slate clean. Start from our new beginning. Block my mind of any what-ifs that try to rise up with Ren's name attached to them. What kind of mother would I be if I did anything other than that?
63. Kylie wakes up one morning to the knowledge that it's time she leaves the house, alone. She's at the kitchen table, reading a book on her Kindle and finishing a pot of coffee, when she looks across the table at her mom and says, "I think I'll go into the city and take Dad to lunch today." Her mom glances up in surprise. "Want me to go with you?" "That's okay. I kind of think I need to venture out on my own." "Are you sure you're ready?" "Yeah, I think so." "Do you want to let him know you're coming?" "I think I'll surprise him. I'm sure he'll be happy to see you." She helps clean up the kitchen and then goes upstairs to shower, irrational apprehension gnawing at her with the thought of driving alone to the city, parking in the dimly lit parking garage next to her dad's office building. She could give in to it, wait another day, but it isn't going to get any easier. In fact, she is pretty sure that every day she lets fear get the better of her, the more difficult it will ever be to conquer it. Her mom watches from the front door as she backs out of the driveway and waves reassuringly, as if she has the whole thing completely under control. She drives the 15 miles or so with a white-knuckle grip on the steering wheel, blasting Spotify tracks through the car's Bluetooth to distract her from anything other than watching the miles slide by on her odometer. She hits the interstate that leads to downtown, and then takes the exit that lets her off a few streets up from the parking garage. She drives straight to it, turns in, and gets her ticket, taking the first available spot. She gets out of the car quickly, hits the remote lock, and runs to the elevator, as if she is late for an appointment, instead of being terrified by ghosts she cannot see. Her dad's office is on the 7th floor. She gets off the elevator and speaks to the receptionist, the same red-haired grandmother who has occupied the position since Kylie was a little girl. Her name is Edith, and she gets up from her seat to walk around the desk and give Kylie a hug. She doesn't need to say anything about what happened to her. Her embrace says it all, and Kylie returns her hug with gratitude. When Kylie steps back, she manages a wobbly smile and says, "I thought I'd surprise my dad and take him out to lunch." "Well, I know that will make his day. You go on back, honey. And take good care of yourself, okay?"
"I will, Edith. Thank you."
Kylie doesn't allow her gaze to stray to the open doors of the offices along the hallway leading to her dad's office. She's not sure she can handle another encounter just now, and she hurries to the end of the hall. The door is half open, and she slightly pushes on it and sticks her head inside. Her dad is standing in front of the window that runs the width of the office. A woman has her arms around his neck, and they are kissing like two people who cannot get enough of each other. The sound that escapes Kylie's throat isn't intentional. In fact, if she could have stepped back out of the office, silent and unnoticed, that is exactly what she would have chosen to do. But her dad looks up just then, spots her, and releases a heavy sigh.
"Kylie," he begins.
She doesn't wait, though, to hear what he has to say. What is there to say? That one picture tells her everything she needs to know.
64. Lizzie. Kylie arrives home far sooner than I expected her back, the streaks on her face clear evidence that she's been crying. I lead her to the living room couch where we both sit for a long time without speaking.
He's a liar,
Kylie finally says, her voice muffled against my shoulder. Who? I ask, but somehow I think I already know.
Daddy. I walked in on him and some woman in his office.
She doesn't add more, but she doesn't need to. I wait for the stab of hurt the word should induce, but I think deep down I've known it was just a matter of time. I pull her tighter against me and say, It's okay, Kylie. Thank you for telling me.
But he's been lying to you, acting as if everything was good again.
I think maybe he wanted it to be.
Are you defending him?
She asks, her voice rising. Of course not. But the two of us don't make each other happy anymore. So maybe this is the reminder I needed that a marriage should be so good that the desire to stray from it never occurs to either person.
Is there such a thing anymore?
Kylie asks, clearly disbelieving. I have to believe so. Yes.
He has no right to hurt you in this way.
I won't lie and say it doesn't hurt. It does. But probably not for the right reasons. We're going to be okay, you and me. It might take a little time, but we're going to be all right. Deal? Kylie nods against my shoulder.
Deal.
65. Lizzie. It doesn't happen overnight, but my promise to Kylie does come true. Life can change tremendously over the course of a year, and ours does. Kylie has gone back to school, determined to finish her degree. I know the fears are still there, but with therapy and pure will on her part, she manages to mostly keep them at bay. She's no longer my little girl, or my sullen teenager, or my standoffish college student. She has grown up now, tarnished by some of the disillusionment that comes with being an adult, but her shine is still there, and I love the relationship we now have with each other. Our conversations never end. Texting allows us to talk nonstop throughout the day, even when she's in class or I'm working on my photography. And we talk every night before bedtime. I cannot deny that good does come from bad sometimes, even though none of us would wish to experience it. I'm out to dinner one night with Wynn, sharing these thoughts with her when she says, Don't you think it's time for you to move on, Lizzie? I have moved on, I say. Ty has remarried, she reminds me, and you haven't even been out on a date. I'm hardly interested in basing what I do on what Ty is doing. Nor should you be. But you deserve to be happy, to have someone good in your life. I have plenty of good in my life. A daughter who loves me, a best friend who indulges my need for an occasional fine meal and talks about good books with me. What else do I need? A man, she says bluntly. Have you even tried to get in touch with him? I don't need to ask who she's talking about. No, I haven't. And I'm not going to. Because you're a chicken, she says. I'm not a chicken. Whatever happened between us, or what might have happened between us, was just a blip in time. That's all. A blip during that time. That doesn't mean it can't have another time. Like now. When there are some things you learn to leave alone. Thinking I could have something with a man like Ren... That, I need to leave alone. But what if he wanted to see you? Would you turn him down? That's not going to happen. He's gone on with his life. I read somewhere that he's no longer performing but developing new talent, starting up other bands. Is that a career that excludes having love in his life? I roll my eyes. I didn't say I'd read that he'd become a monk. To the contrary, I'm sure. You never answered my question. What? Would you see him again if he wanted to see you? He doesn't, I say. Now, can we get back to our bottle of wine?
66. Ren. There is no doubt in my mind that I am taking a risk, possibly one where I will make a fool of myself and end up regretting that I ever climbed out on this particular limb. At the same time, I'm pretty sure I will regret not trying. I stand in front of the hotel room dressing mirror, making a last-minute adjustment to my tie. I don't remember the last time I wore one, and I second-guess whether I should just go with the shirt and jacket. But Lizzie's friend Wynne had said suits would be the norm, and I have no desire to stand out among Lizzie's peers as a stereotypical rock star in torn blue jeans and a t-shirt. I wonder not for the first time if I should let her know I'm coming. Do I owe her that? Is this too far out in left field? I force myself to put aside the questions, leave on the tie, and head for the elevator. There's only one way to find out if I have made more of what Lizzie and I shared in Italy than it really was. Time and imagination can do that. Seeing her face to face is how I will get my answer. And if I'm honest, I'm afraid if I call her, she'll tell me not to come. So I go with the element of surprise. It's the only card I have left to play.
67. Lizzie. It's one of those things you dream about but never think will really happen. I stand in the middle of the room, taking in the framed photographs on the surrounding walls, and even though they're mine, I can't help but admire them. Feel proud of them, like children I have raised to a respectable degree of success. The gallery is crowded. Mine isn't the only work being shown tonight. Three other photographers have displays in adjoining rooms. It feels really nice to be a part of it, to achieve recognition not for the sake of recognition, but for validation of something I love to do and might possibly be able to make a living at.
Clearly you know San Gimignano.
Recognition instantly washes over me. I can't move, can't make myself turn around because I don't want to be wrong. But he reaches out and turns me to face him. I'm not wrong. He really is here. Ren, I say, his name barely more than a whisper.
Hey, Lizzie,
he says, his gaze drinking in my face, dropping lower to take in my dress, my bare legs, my high heels. How did you... What are you...
Wynne called me about the show. I hope you don't mind that I came.
No, I say, shaking my head. I can't believe you're really here.
I wasn't sure you would be okay with it.
Kylie walks up to stand beside me just then. I look at her, preparing to babble some explanation, but she smiles and sticks out her hand to Ren. It's about time my mom let me meet you.
You're Kylie,
Ren says, shaking her hand and smiling the smile that would do to Kylie's insides exactly what it had done to mine the first time he turned it on me. It's awesome to meet you, she says, disbelief underlining each word.
It's awesome to meet you,
he says. Wynne slinks into sight then, her expression hopeful and a little wary. Am I in the doghouse or not? She asks, looking at me. You definitely should be, I say.
I'll take that as a no, she says with a look of relief.
Ren shoves his hands in his pockets and says,
So about that San Gimignano piece? I'm interested in that one.
I shake my head. You don't have to do that.
Oh, but I want to. You see, I have some really good memories of that town.
You do? I say softly.
I do. And with that photograph, every time I walk by it, I'll be reminded of those memories. I think that's a good thing. Do you?
I guess it could be, I allow, feeling Kylie and Wynne staring at me as if they aren't sure who I am.
Well, why don't we agree on a price? And then to celebrate, I'd like to take you three ladies out to dinner after the show.
Is that your limo out front? Kylie asks, reverting to teenage awe as her face lights up with excitement.
We'll have plenty of room, he says. And I've got champagne in the back. We can enjoy it without having to worry about driving.
Wow,
Kylie says, and then looking at me. Are we going, Mom? I'm not sure you're going to let me say no, I say, smiling.
All right, then, Ren says, taking my arm and leading me toward the San Gimignano photo. Let's get business squared away.
He leans in and says close to my ear,
And as long as you're in the mode of saying yes, I have another question or two for you. Later, when we're alone.
Oh, you do? I say, letting myself look into his eyes without bothering to hide how happy I am to see him, how much I've missed him.
Hold that thought, he says, brushing my cheek with his lips. First things first. Now, about the price you have on this spectacular photo, I don't think you're charging nearly enough.
I laugh. But you're the customer. You shouldn't mind.
I know what it's worth, though, right?
He asks. Maybe, I concede.
Then I should get to set the price. Right?
You're far too used to getting your way, I say.
Where you're concerned, he says, leaning in to kiss me full on the mouth, before adding, Let's hope the trend continues.
68. Lizzie. 8 months later. The trend continues. How in the world can a woman say no to Ren Sawyer? I certainly can't. Not when he asks me to finish our driving tour of Italy. 6 months venturing from one town to another, stopping whenever we feel like it, eating our weight in pasta and tiramisu. He buys a Range Rover so we have plenty of space this time, Sophia napping on the back seat unless she chooses to sit on my lap and look out the window at the vineyards flowing by. Hillside towns in the distance. It feels like a dream, and there are times when I am convinced it can be nothing else. I take thousands of pictures, going through them at night and deleting the less spectacular ones, keeping the others. While I'm taking pictures of everything in sight, Ren begins writing in a journal. He has an idea for a book about his experiences with his brother and their band. It seems like a sort of catharsis for him. I know he won't cut himself any slack in the picture he paints of his success, as well as his regrets. Putting the truth out for the world to not only see, but judge him by, is a form of restitution for him where his brother is concerned. At some point along the way, I realize that although he will never forgive himself for what he considers a betrayal of his brother, he is determined to live in a way that would make Colby proud. And I am proud of him for his determination to face his past, accept it and his mistakes in a way that still allows him to find joy in his life. And that, I think I can say, we've both done. I'm grateful for every day. Kylie's abduction has made me realize how very fragile our lives are, how quickly it can all change, how unimaginable our losses can be. I have a relationship with my daughter now that means more to me than I can ever put into words. She's getting her master's degree in psychology and wants to work with victims traumatized by criminal acts committed against them. She's decided to work on her degree at Stanford in California, needing a change of scenery from Charlottesville and all the memories it holds for her. I think it is a good decision. She's met someone, a South Carolina boy who looks at her as if she has all the answers to the universe. They both fly to Venice and meet us for a 2-week stay, and I really can't imagine life getting any better than the warm days we spend winding through the treasure trove of Venetian streets, lazing along its canals on sleek gondolas, and eating the wonderful food available at every corner. Then Ren asks me another question. At the top of the Spanish Steps in Rome, on a beautiful, cloudless June afternoon. He's wearing sunglasses, but not the baseball cap he usually wears in public places. There are people all around us. Are you sure we should be here? I ask him. You're likely to get mobbed. He doesn't answer me,
but takes my hand and moves to the step below me, dropping down on one knee. My lips part in surprise, and my heart starts beating 1,000 miles an hour. Ren, what are you? He reaches in his pocket and pulls out a small blue Tiffany box tied with a white ribbon. He hands it to me and says, "Will you open it, please?" I take it from him, staring at the lid and then raising my gaze to his. "Ren, there are people looking."
"Open it," he says again. "Please."
Around us, people are starting to aim phones in our direction, pictures snapping. I hear a girl's voice say, "Oh my gosh, that's Ren Sawyer."
"Ren." "Please, Lizzie."
And so I untie the white ribbon, lift the lid, pull out the inner box, and slowly open it. The diamond catches the sunlight, a work of art against its velvet background. I try to speak, but I can't make a single word come out.
"Lizzie, will you marry me?"
Ren asks. I lift my gaze to his again and see the uncertainty in his eyes, realizing suddenly that he's afraid I'll say no. Unbelievable as that is to me. "Why here?" I ask, glancing around at the people smiling and staring at us.
"Because I want the world to know I love you, that I want to spend my life with you, that you're the woman I've been waiting for."
I feel the tears well in my eyes, slide down my cheeks. He reaches up and wipes them away with his thumb.
"Will you?"
he repeats. I nod once, laughing and crying at the same time. Cheers erupt around us. Ren stands and slips his arms around my waist, pulling me to him. Church bells toll in the distance, taxi horns sound from below the Spanish steps. But it all fades away as he lowers his mouth to mine, kissing me in a way he's never kissed me before, as if I'm his, as if I always will be. I kiss him back with awareness of this and then say it out loud. "Yes. Yes, I will marry you, Ren Sawyer." And the trend continues.
69. Ren. Epilogue. The sun is just coming up on the Mediterranean horizon. I can see it beginning its ascent to the sky through the glass door of our bedroom. I've been awake for a while now, but it's not because I couldn't sleep. I just don't want to. I do this a lot. Wake up before she does so I can watch her sleeping. She usually opens her eyes pretty quickly, as if she can feel me looking at her. This morning is no exception. She comes awake slowly, blinking once and then bringing me into focus.
"Good morning,"
she says, her voice husky in the way it is before she has her coffee. "Morning," I say, reaching out to brush the back of my hand across her cheek. She stares into my eyes and brushes her lips across my hand.
"I had a dream last night," she says.
"About what?" I ask, leaning in to kiss the base of her throat and following her bare skin to the side of her breast. She's naked under the sheet, and I gather her against me, my hand skimming the back of her bare leg.
"About us,"
she says, kissing my ear and then my mouth. We kiss for a minute or more before I say, "We were doing this in your dream." She smiles and says,
"I think we had done this. And a lot more, actually."
"That's my favorite kind of dream," I say, sliding her on top of me. I know every inch, every curve, every soft spot of her, but I don't think I'll ever grow tired of feeling her against me, of the knowledge that we fit as if we were made for each other. She makes a soft sound of pleasure, and then says near my ear,
"It may not be a dream."
"It's definitely not one right now," I agree, laughing.
"I think we might have made a baby, Ren."
I go completely still. "What did you say?"
"A baby? Would that be a good dream?"
she asks, and I hear the slight note of uncertainty in her voice. "That would be an incredible dream," I say softly. The best dream ever.
I'm late, she says. Like, really late.
Seriously?